All right, welcome to Double Take with Matt and Jake. This is Jake, joined by Matt, as always. We got a huge episode today. Mike Renner from Pro Football Focus is coming on. We just had a great interview with him. He's probably my favorite draft guy to listen to. Like, love his stuff, love reading him. He's on the – got a new podcast coming out late August. So, I think it's a great interview. What are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, it was good. I think we've had a lot of good people on, but I think this was the most – fanboy that you've ever been.
He kind of had the same thing. Like, I could just talk about the NFL draft for hours. I know we're like the opposite of NFL draft season right now,
right?
But I think he's really smart. I love listening to smart people, especially something I enjoy reading about. You know, that's my favorite sporting event of the year is the NFL draft,
right? Yeah, no, what it was interesting, like, talking about someone like where the draft is their thing, kind of like the way they look at football. So
yeah,
cool guy, good interview.
Yeah, so that's really exciting. So that'll be a good thing to listen to. Before we jump to the interview, just want to talk. There's not a lot of sports going on, but want to talk real quick about the women's Euros. England beat Germany yesterday. I mean, I don't know how in depth we need to be. That was the main highlight, is England beat Germany in extra time on home soil. So unlike the men, the women brought it home, the Euro trophy.
And I'm glad they're happy. I'm glad so many people went to the game. I thought bringing it home was for the World Cup. I thought the World Cup was it.
I think England will take anything they can get.
Just at this point, it's been so long. Yeah. They just need something.
Well, I don't know if the men. So the men haven't won the World Cup since '66. I'm not sure when the last time they've won a Euro was, but it wasn't recently.
Yes. No. It's definitely been a long time. Women, I would need to look at the winners of the Women's World Cup. I'm quite sure England has never won, although the Women's World Cup hasn't been around for nearly as long as the men's.
I think Great Britain might be the worst basketball team, like, of countries that actually have a basketball team, they might be the worst one. Mm-hmm. So I think it's just a trophy-deprived country.
Yeah, they want to just get something.
Yeah. So good for them.
Yeah, good for them. That was your pick, I believe.
I did. I picked England over Germany. So yeah, that was my pick.
Yeah.
Tony Finau going to golf. He's won two tournaments in a row, back to back. It's not majors. I wish he would have started winning tournaments a few weeks ago for the Open. But Tony Finau went back to back. Our guy from Utah. So love seeing him win. Well, let's get to the Mike Renner interview. All right, welcome back to Double Take with Matt and Jake. We're joined now by Mike Renner, the best NFL draft analyst. Mike, appreciate you coming on, man.
No, thanks for having me. Best draft analyst is a high bar to clear. I am very flattered by that intro. That was right to the point.
My favorite, at least. there's a bunch of good guys, but I just love the way you do it. It's a perfect combination of, like, simple but in-depth at the same time. I'm looking at your, like, 23 top 50 prospects right now. I just love what you do. I appreciate you coming on.
Well, I thank you for having me. I actually haven't been on a podcast in a while here. I kind of took the summer off in terms of doing audio video stuff. Obviously, our podcast Tailgate no longer exists, so I haven't been on a mic in a minute. I might be a little rusty here.
That's fine. Well, I figured this is probably July or August is the best time to reach out to you. You're pretty busy the rest of the year, I imagine.
Yeah, I always feel bad like during draft time because everyone obviously wants to talk about draft during draft time, but then everyone picks like the 2 weeks before to reach out to me and be like, hey, can we get you on? And it's like you and literally every other person that just started talking about the draft have reached out. So I have to tell a lot of people no. And I always hate doing that because I don't want to ever be that guy. I don't want to feel like I'm too big to like not go on someone's podcast. I would never turn someone down, but just you got to make concessions at some point. So I turn a lot of people down during draft season. But if it's not draft season and I got time, I'm always available.
Well, good timing for us. We're glad you took a break from golf. Before we kind of dive into like some of the actual NFL stuff, college stuff, I just want to talk about you went to Notre Dame, accounting major, if I'm correct.
Correct. Yeah. I was actually a double accounting and computer applications. Okay. So I usually just say the accounting because it's obviously computer applications is not really a well-known degree, but yeah, it was actually a double major.
I'm not sure I know what computer applications is, honestly.
It was easy as it was just like learned how to use a computer. It was such an easy major. That's why I did it.
That's awesome.
How'd you go from that? I know you've told us before, but how'd you go from that to PFF and then everything in between.
I really, like, looking back, I graduated at the right time, honestly. I was very lucky, obviously, to get in, but, like, I always loved stats, always loved, you know, in-depth analysis, sort of whatever. I didn't just only love football growing up, even though I've kind of lost touch with, like, other sports in terms of how much I watch them and how much I follow them, but always loved that. And it really wasn't, like, going back when I graduated 2012, there was no analytics really in the NFL. It was in baseball. It was kind of come up in basketball, but analytics was kind of hand wavy. It was football outsiders, and PFF wasn't even really that well known back then. So I was getting in right at the right time. I followed PFF probably my last 2 years of college. I applied to their analyst role, which was, I would come to find, not really an analyst role. It was like, how well can you do data collection? And apparently I could do data collection pretty well. Cause I got hired for that. And then, it's kind of snowballed from there. A decade later, here I am doing NFL draft for them. And it's been a great run.
Is this something that you kind of, and I know you talked about this on your podcast that you used to do with Austin. Like, did you always wanted to be a draft guy, right? Was that your goal coming into PFF? Like, I want to be draft specific.
Yeah. So I was born, so my birthday is April 27th. So the draft was always around my birthday. And I'd always, ever since I was, you know, probably 8, 9 years old, I remember when it was on the Saturday, like I'd sit there all 7 rounds, watch every single pick. Like, that to me, that was always interesting. Cause it was like, it was like how teams were made. It was, to me, I always like would play, when I play video games, I wouldn't actually play the game. I would just do the roster building and the drafting. And like, I would just, creating the team to me was always the more interesting part rather than maybe the actual game. So to me, that was always the fun part. And so I kind of, when I got PFF, that was always kind of what I was gunning for, ultimately. And we didn't even do college when it started. And so when we did start grading college, I was like, hey, I like kept pushing for draft. And then finally, a few years after that, I was the draft guy, and then been the draft guy ever since.
One of the things that I love, like reading your stuff, listening to you talk, like when you're grading a player, there's specific either traits or measurables that you look at, of like arm length for cornerbacks or whatever. Those things, is that something you picked up at PFF? Because it seems like they give you a lot of leeway to like make the board and go from there.
Yeah, so I do have full control over the board. Like, no one tells me really what to do. I don't have to follow the grades. I don't have to follow any of the analytics projections. The board is my opinion, and they trust me because I've been doing it long enough. Like I said, I've been getting draft guides ever since I was 10 years old and following those. So they trust me enough to do that. But, I mean, I learned football from, you know, former NFL coaches, former NFL players. Like, that's how I learned the game. And so seeing it through their lens and what they look for is kind of what taught me about, you know, what to look for at certain positions and what matters at certain positions. And then just learning from mistakes and seeing it firsthand myself, like going through past evaluations. Why did I miss? Why did I hit on a guy? And then kind of learning from that. So it's been a lot of different factors, but yeah, there's no one way to analyze a player. There's no one thing that's, you know, as much as we wanted to find like one metric or one grade or stat that can project to the NFL, it's still a lot of different things you have to take into account. So that's what I'm trying to do best here is, you know, which ones matter the most, optimize those, you know, find out which matters the most, but there is no one thing that matters above all. It's kind of just a holistic evaluation process.
Speaking of those, kind of learning from past mistakes and trying to figure out what's important, what's not, do you have a guy that you thought was going to do really well in the NFL but was just a total bust, didn't work out? And then at the same time, maybe a guy who you were really high on that you weren't seeing high up on the boards on some of those other sites that did end up having a really good career?
Yeah, I've talked about, you know, there's some really egregious ones. A guy that I thought was going to be really good. Let's start with the guy I thought was going to be really good. I'm trying to think here. I'll go back to like Paul Dawson, who was like one of the very first years of PFF. And I wasn't even doing really draft full time back then. I was just actually doing NFL and just would come give draft takes. We had actually, we had other people doing draft back then, and I kind of just would have like one position that I would look at or two positions I'd look at a year. And so Paul Doss was TCU linebacker, ended up being a third round pick, but he was just, I thought he was so instinctive in college that it was going to translate to the NFL, despite being, you know, a below average athlete. I think he ran like a 4.85 or something at the combine. And it didn't. And also Paul Doss was kind of a piece of shit from hearing people talk about him around town in Cincinnati, which doesn't help either at the NFL level. Is not working hard will not help you. And especially if you're an instinctive linebacker, you do have to, at the NFL level, watch tape to still be an instinctive linebacker. So that didn't help him either. But you just, there are positions where, again, you can't be a below average athlete and expect to be a high level productive NFL player. There are just certain positions where that's not going to fly. I think linebacker, probably one of them at this point, with how the game has gone. So that's one that I believed in, didn't end up working out. The guy that I've like known for being super high on that ended up working out was Chris Jones, defense tackle for the Chiefs. I think I called him a top five player in that class, which was 2016. And obviously he slipped to the second round, but has resulted in being a top five player from that class. So that was probably the one that I called more so than anyone else. But there's not, to me, like, I don't love beating my chest about wins. It's like, because it's kind of like, every year it's just about the process and improving it and being, you know, to me, not missing on guys highly is far more impactful. Like, it, obviously we're doing this in a vacuum, and it's, I do it for, it's all entertainment at the end of the day for what I'm doing. But to me, like, if you're super high on a guy, great, but you don't want to have guys in your top 10, top 15, top 20 that end up being busts. That's how you go south as a franchise. You got to pick up the easy win. So to me, not being high on guys that end up sucking is far, far more important to me.
What, I mean, along that line, you're learning every year, picking up new things. It might be hard to point to one particular thing, but is there something from like this past year, last couple years that you've like, oh, I need to do this better, tweak X, Y, or Z?
That's a good, I mean, I do think quarterback evaluation is one where everyone's trying to figure out what to do better. You know, everyone's trying to figure out, what do I go look for? Because no one's getting it right. You know, anyone that tells you that they've, you know, predicted how the careers of Justin Herbert, Patrick Mahomes, you know, Josh Allen, anyone that says they've hit on all these guys, they're lying to you. Like, there has not been anyone, even like the NFL. I mean, if they knew what they were going to be, they wouldn't have lasted to where all those guys lasted. So I do think that position especially, it is about imagining what they could be and what the offenses around him, because I do think offensive coordinators being far more flexible nowadays than they were even a decade ago is a big reason for a lot of those guys' success as well. So I do think that that's something that has to be taken into account, is not just what they are at the moment, not to say what they are at the moment, but like imagining a perfect scenario and how they can excel in a perfect scenario, because teams are more willing to build that perfect scenario for you if you are physically gifted at the quarterback position. So I do think that's the one where I've really had to go back to the drawing board and kind of reassess, and not just lean towards the guys who play from the pocket, guys who play on time, guys who are accurate, you know, that sort of prototype, and think of the quarterback position as more of a scorer position, more of a position where you want a guy who can actually put points on the board for you all on his own, as opposed to needing to operate within an offense.
You know, that's like a perfect transition to what player I wanted to ask you about in this class, a quarterback who I think you're higher on than probably most people, at least just based on the tape so far. Who I love. We're both Mormon, did Mormon missions as well, so that's why I love this guy. But Tanner McKee at Stanford, if you just look at the numbers, not whatever, but really high recruit, you've loved him for a while. Is that kind of that same vein? Like, you can just see him with an NFL offense, NFL talent, you can see some stuff coming through there?
Yeah, because I do still think that matters. You know, like NFL readiness, and you saw with Davis Mills and him being probably, you know, better than some of the other rookie quarterbacks coming from the offense he did at Stanford, where, you know, taking snaps under center, his footwork, his play fakes, all that stuff wasn't a transition for him. So he gets to the NFL and it's like, there's not a lot that he hasn't done in the playbook that he's given already. Whereas some other guys, it may be a bigger transition. So I do always, you know, that is always something that does matter and that you look towards. And to me, McKee is very similar in that, you know, his footwork is fantastic. The way he manipulates the pocket, his timing, you know, his quick release and arm talents there, the size, like ticks a lot of those boxes that he loves to see at the position. And to me, like, I just don't see him making a lot of, like, bad misses with the football. Like, when he misses, it is on the safe side. It is to where you want a guy to miss. And so he may not put up the biggest numbers, and it's not an offense that's conducive to putting up the biggest numbers, but, like, when things are bad, they're not egregiously bad. He's not, you know, panicky, making these ugly throws. Like, his bad is really not that bad, in my opinion. So that's something that I always like to see at the quarterback position. So, yeah, I'm a big fan of his. And truthfully, just to give a little teaser here, he's going to be one of the first interviews. I already interviewed him for an upcoming podcast, but a good half hour interview, really got to know him. And he is a sharp dude, very mature. I was even more sold after talking to him because he seemed like a leader of men type that really is going to do whatever it takes. So I'm a big fan of McKee's. And yeah, he's quarterback three on the PFF draft board right now, but that's because there's two damn good quarterbacks ahead of him. I do really like this quarterback class that's coming up.
Yeah, in my intro, I was just so excited to talk. I forgot to mention your upcoming podcast that you're going to be dropping probably late August, your new deal. So, my bad.
Oh, no, it's actually, we haven't even promoted it yet, haven't even dropped anything. So, this is you heard it here first. This is the first time we're ever even talking about it publicly.
There you go, breaking news.
That's great. That's awesome.
Yeah, well, let's talk about those two quarterbacks, Bryce Young and CJ Stroud. I think they're both great. I always get excited to hear. I guess I would ask with Bryce Young, are you worried about the size? We've seen small quarterbacks, so I don't think it's a huge deal, but that seems like his biggest, if you're nitpicking, his biggest thing is just the size.
Yeah, so the interesting thing about Young, and that's definitely, like, that's definitely going to factor into the eval. Teams are going to be worried about it. Like, I do think he'll probably understands that, and that he's probably spent a good deal of time in the weight room this offseason. And even after this season, we'll be eating like crazy just to weigh in at a number that's like respectable by the combine. So it wouldn't surprise me if he gets to somewhere like 210 by the time we're measuring next February. And people don't really talk about that as much as the height, which the height, I mean, it is impactful. A lot of shorter quarterbacks have struggled to use the middle of the field. But the thing I love about Young and why he's number one on this list is because he had the highest grade of any returning quarterback when attacking between the numbers last year. Like, he that has not been an issue for him. And now, that's not to say that he'll be the same at the NFL level and that it's not a different animal. It definitely is. You know, Drew Brees famously would get on his toes just so he could see over the offensive line to work the middle of the field in his dropbacks and practice doing so, because that little bit does matter. And you do struggle when you are at that height to see over your offensive line. And that's obviously how going to impact how you work the middle of the field. So that is the thing, but he already has overcome it. And to me, what I talked about at the top about that scorer, he has that. And everyone you talk to around, whether it's Alabama, dating back to high school, raves about that ability that he brings to the table of, if there's a play that needs to be made, he is going to make that play. And I think you saw that against Georgia in the SC title game. I always go back to the one play that was John Metchie running a post into a, you know, a post safety, which is just, you know, not a route you're going to throw, but he points him, John Metchie, to the corner and throws it to the corner, tells him to break off a route against the Georgia defense in the SC championship game in his first year as a starter, which is just like confidence that you don't see and playmaking ability you don't see from a lot of guys. So that showed up consistently on his tape to where, you know, that's Russell Wilson type stuff. That's the stuff that makes you think he can overcome being shorter. So yeah, I'm a big fan of Bryce Young. And again, if you can do what he did against Georgia defense, you could do that against NFL defense still.
Yeah. And ever since high school, he balled out at Matter Day. I was shocked when he didn't go to USC when he flipped to Bama. Looking at Stroud, this is something, you know, I'm looking, like I mentioned, at your 23 big board, which is obviously going to change a lot as we're going through starting the season. Right now, Stroud's QB2 right behind him. A lot of what you're talking about is in here is how Stroud's probably going to get compared to Justin Fields a lot, but they actually play quite differently. Stroud's been, Kyle Whittingham, the Utah coach, said he's the most accurate passer in college football. I guess I don't really have a question with that. I should, probably should have thought of one, but I guess just talk about Stroud for a little bit. What are your thoughts there?
I'm not surprised Whittingham would say that after what happened in the Rose Bowl. I mean, it's difficult for him to probably see anyone else as being more accurate. And it's also tough, like, with what he put on tape. You know, take away kind of the first couple games of his season when, you know, I think after that Tulsa game, I can't remember exactly what injury he had, but then he missed a game, comes back, and once he came back, he was comfortable. Like, he was early on, Oregon game, Minnesota game, a little, you know, just jittery. Your first two starts of your collegiate career, you're not going to look like, you know, if you look like the number one overall pick, you would be Trevor Lawrence. People would be talking about you like that. No one does, you know, that early on. So if you just take, you know, take those out of the equation, then what he did down the stretch, obviously the Utah game, being kind of the icing on the cake when he didn't have, you know, the 10th and 11th overall pick to throw to, that is when you're really like, okay, this is an NFL quarterback. He was, and to kind of hammer home why he's so different than Justin Fields, like, he's not just, I think Fields in that offense really waited out and knew that, hey, I have dudes that are winning down the football field and I have an offensive lineman that's not going to put me under pressure. And so he had the time to just sit in that pocket, know he has the arm talent to get it to any guy that's separating down the football field and was going to hit them. Now, CJ Stroud is much more of a take what the defense is giving to me. And that's why his completion percentage is much higher. Why he's not, you know, his average depth of target is for like 2 yards lower is because he was much more willing to take what the defense is giving to you. And that is, that's what you have to do at the NFL level. I mean, that's why we saw Justin Fields take so many sacks as a rookie. Obviously, Bears O-line had something to do with that, but you just cannot play going for the deep ball every time at the NFL level. You sometimes have to take what's given to you. And Stroud was so, so good at that. I think he has one of the most aesthetically pleasing releases, like just such a tight, easy release that is going to translate to the NFL. No worries about that whatsoever. So, yeah, I'm a big fan of CJ Stroud. Comparing these two, younger Stroud, it's like flipping a coin at this point.
I would think there's the other guy in between them is Will Anderson. There realistically, there's not a chance he goes number one just because if you're drafting number one, you probably need one of these quarterbacks, right?
Correct. I do think at this point, I don't. It is 1 year, but I think everyone's seen enough. You know, I don't. If Bryce Young struggles a little this year, I think Stroud could jump. It will obviously jump him. I think Stroud is as good a chance right now to go number one overall as Bryce Young does, but I don't really see a world in where one of those two is not the number one overall pick. It would floor me. Someone would have to come out of nowhere to leapfrog those guys, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, some team if at two or three or wherever is going to get real lucky with Will Anderson, whoever he.
Oh yeah. It's going to be like, you know, one of the Bosas, like Chase Young. That guy's that caliber of. You don't have to really question what he's going to be at the NFL level. It's going to be damn good.
Man, I love talking drafts, but I just have a couple more questions. Don't want to take up too much of your time, but literally I could talk about this for hours.
Same. I do.
Sorry, what?
I said, I literally do. That's my job. So same.
I need to get into your career. Is there a quarterback who outside of your top 50 right now, who'd be most likely to have like a Joe Burrow type jump up from like whatever mid-round pick to a top 10, top 15 type?
The one guy that I would say like could do that is Anthony Richardson. I like Devin Leary from NC State a lot. I don't think he has the talent around him to put up those kind of numbers, to put up that kind of season. A lot of people are high on Tyler Van Dyke. I just don't see the accuracy from Van Dyke that would have him leapfrog those guys. But Richardson is a different animal, the Florida quarterback, because he has, you know, better size, the best size of any of these dudes. He's like 6'4", 240. And he runs away from, you know, defensive backs on his tape. Like, I am very interested to see what he runs when he gets the combine or his pro day or whatever, if Bruce Feldman's freaks list drops and he's, you know, in the top 10 or whatever, because he is, that guy is a special athlete and has special arm talent to where, hey, if he puts it all together, it's going to look better than Bryce Young doing it at 6'1", 194. You know, it's just going to be what NFL teams want. So that's the guy I'd highlight. Obviously very limited snaps. What did he start, like 5-6 games last year? But if he puts it all together and really has a year, he could, like I said, he could leapfrog those other two guys.
I'm excited. I'll actually be at the Florida Utah game in Gainesville. Like, so I'm excited to see him in person.
Oh, there you go.
The other
homecoming for Diabate.
Yeah, which was, I thought it was kind of weird. I mean, I guess it's kind of weird playing the team you just transferred from the first game. But the other game I'm going to, and I was going to ask you about this, BYU Notre Dame, Las Vegas. Are you going to be there?
Ooh, I want to go. I don't know if I'm going to be able to swing it with work. The hype video for that, the release of the jersey, has got me real juiced up. I know Allegiant Stadium is very, very sick, and I love Las Vegas, big fan. So I want to badly, but I'm not sure I'm going to be able to make it work. I think my brother might be going though, so I will be watching that one closely. That's going to be a good game.
I'm excited. Obviously, BYU, we're BYU grads, so we're cheering for BYU. But I went to a Notre Dame Carolina game last year, and it was probably my favorite football game I've ever been to. Like, just such a, everything about it, unbelievable. So
yeah, the pageantry.
Yeah,
it's special place.
Notre Dame empathetic for sure. I love what Marcus Freeman is doing. If you do go, DM me. I'll buy you a drink. I owe you for coming on. So
I'll take you up on that. Are they selling drinks? Well, that's a Mormon school and a Catholic school. Are they allowed to?
I actually don't. I just remember.
I think they will be. They'd be crazy not.
Yeah,
to.
No, they had them, but it was, who was BYU playing?
They played U of A last year.
Yeah, so they didn't get as many people traveling down. I imagine more Notre Dame people come down. So
the Coca-Cola machine line was bussing at that BYU Arizona game last year.
Oh yeah, are they putting creamer in?
Yeah,
getting the. I think Notre Dame gets first, like it's the Shamrock Series games. It's like home games for them. So they pack the house themselves. They don't give BYU as many tickets. So it's going to be probably a Notre Dame heavy crowd.
Yeah. I actually went on a date with a girl who works for BYU athletic department. She said like Notre Dame gave BYU like no tickets. So
good. So you're good.
It should be a fun game though. I'm hoping to go down with that. Maybe I sit in the Notre Dame section and wear neutral colors, not get in trouble with anybody.
Yeah, I mean Notre Dame fans aren't. They're all like 50 plus anyway at games. It's not a raucous crowd usually. So
yeah, everyone I met at Notre Dame was like super nice, super friendly. Like I said, couldn't everything 100% positive about it. So I'm excited to go see him again. Like, should be fun. And the jerseys were sick. That video was pretty funny.
Yeah, I mean the acting a little rough. I'll be honest, not going to make the jump to Hollywood anytime soon for Michael Mayer or coach there. But yeah, it was a funny video.
Yeah. Michael Mayer in particular seemed a little stiff. But.
dude looks like a creative player on like NCAA 13. He's got like the ideal like jawline / like neck. That's the same size as his face that he just looks straight out of video game.
Yeah. He's good. I'm hoping to get him on my, Dynasty team next year in our redraft. Hopefully no one on my league is listening to this so they don't snag him. But yeah, Mike, thanks for coming on again. If you go to that game, let me know, or if you come back to Salt Lake. You were here a few months ago, I think. So
I was up at Salt Lake a few months ago. Absolutely beautiful area. I went hiking a bunch, went out a few places, loved the liquor laws there, cracked me up in Utah that you couldn't get anything over 5%. And couldn't get doubles, but I had a great time.
Yeah, it's different state for sure. But yeah, let me know. And then yeah, next off season, try to get you on again, maybe during your not as busy right after the draft, maybe.
For sure, fellas. I'd be happy to.
All right, appreciate you coming on, and we'll be right back. All right, big thanks to Mike Renner for coming on. Again, he's at Pro Football Focus. The big word I was referencing. If you just go to PFF and type in like big board or even just Google 2023 big board, it was like the first thing that came up. Mike does a great in-depth job. It's easy, but you also like are learning a lot. So it's Some people, I feel like, try to act or sound smart. Mike doesn't do that. He just, like, comes across easy to understand. A lot of in-depth stuff as well that helps you understand the props, prospects, pros and cons, things like that. So definitely follow him. Check out his podcast that's coming up. Appreciate you guys listening. We got a couple other guests in the pipeline, in the works.
Yeah, I think, like, up the pipe or in the works.
I think I was going to say pipeline and then work, so then I was going to say pipe works, and that just sounded wrong. So we got a couple of guests coming up.
That's the important thing.
Yeah. So, yeah, appreciate Mike. Check him out. Appreciate everybody for listening. Feel free to leave a 5-star review. Subscribe while you're there. Anything else, Matt?
No, thanks. Just have a great week.
All right. Talk to you guys later.